Hi, and welcome to Pod Sothoth, a Lovecraft book club. Today, we'll be discussing The Dreams in the Witch House by H.P. Lovecraft, which was first published in the July 1933 issue of Weird Tales. I'm your host, Todd Beardsley, and today we have a very special guest. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm not a special guest.
Very special. Special to me.
Well, yes.
I think I've used that joke before.
Have you? Probably.
Anyway, who are you? What is it you do here?
My name is Claire Reynolds.
Hey.
And I am here to provide color commentary.
and the unique legal perspective of, also, you're not super huge into, well, you weren't into huge into Lovecraft until like the last couple of years, I guess.
I'm not, I would say I'm still not huge into it, but I enjoy it. No. I just mean like, I don't want to be a poser. I mean, I like it.
Well, we're all posers,
and I enjoy it. And I enjoy it with you. I'm not trying to say that I'm like a Lovecraft.
You're not a total noob.
Right.
And you're not like a studied, dusty expert.
Right.
Who glosses over all the racism.
Right.
All right. Well, let's talk about Dreams in the Witch House. So I read this aloud a little while ago. We've been on a little bit of a break, a little hiatus.
And I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter for the people in the future.
Still
because
2019.
As far as anyone is concerned, if you listen to this deep into the future, you won't notice at all the difference. So we're not going to talk about it anymore. But I did read this. The last time I read this was a little while ago. I read it for the podcast. You read this today.
Yes.
So your takes are going to be... are going to be much fresher than mine. So let's get into it. I really like Dreams in the Witch House. To me, it is the most Lovecraftian Lovecraft that ever Lovecrafted the Lovecraftville. It's got it all. It's got witches. It's got crazy hyperdimensional stuff. It's got time travel. It's got
a math.
It's got tons of math. It's got weird math. I think he even makes some references to like that newfangled quantum stuff, the physics, which for Lovecraft is very cutting edge. You know, you have to recall that these are 100 years old or so. Actually, this one's one of his later ones. This is only like 90 years old. But yeah, it's got all the things. And everyone dies at the end. So it's, if you play any Arkham horror, like we do, Yeah, but it ends with, I think, Brown Jenkin, which is a horrible rat monster, basically bursts out of his chest like an aliens, right? Like,
hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my raccoon gal.
So,
yeah, he just rockets past Eerie directly into super gross, creepy gore.
Yeah, yeah. And we've been watching a lot of like 80s and 90s horror, so it seems like this would be like, it's surprising to me that there's no like Stuart Gordon treatment of Dreams in the Witch House. But Jeffrey Combs is still around. And
we could do it. He's too old to be Gilman.
Yeah, but he is. But he could be one of like the crazy Polish people that live in the
I know. Nah, you know what? House. What? He can still be Gilman. What if we're going for who cares, right?
Yes. Well, obviously, like the dream casting would be Jeffrey Combs of Reanimator era,
right,
as Gilman. It's real funny. We watched an interview not too long ago with Jeffrey Combs, kind of a long extended rambly interview with Joe Bob Briggs, because we've been watching a lot of Last Drive-In with Joe Bob. And Jeffrey Combs talks about his introduction to Lovecraft and how he knew nothing about it. Basically, it's like, oh, cool, Lovecraft, all right, whatever. And then just promptly became one of the major superstars of the Lovecraftiverse.
How can you teach such drivel? These people are here to learn, and you're closing their minds before they even have a chance.
All I want to do is go to Necronomicon in Providence and hang out with Jeffrey Combs. That would be great.
Hey, if you're listening to this and you haven't gotten the vaccine, get the fucking vaccine.
Please get the fucking vaccine. So, that's
just
been part of the reason
why
we haven't podcasted in a little while. Things were a little crazy, but regardless, like everybody, we're all vaccinated. All our friends are vaccinated. But I'm not friends with many Republicans. And so that would account for why I know, everyone I know is vaccinated, and it's baffling to me why people aren't. So,
like you could just get vaccinated if it's a pride thing, or like you don't want to lose your right wing cred, just get vaccinated, but tell everyone you're not. That's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You can totally lie. And you know what? Republicans will believe you. So, yes. They're easy to fool, apparently.
Oh boy. Yeah, we just lost two members of our audience.
Sorry. So I have a suspicion that our audience skews pretty hard to the liberal. And that's great. So, but let's talk about Dreams of the Witch House. So what's your favorite part, Claire?
I mean, I just like the whole atmosphere that it builds. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just creepy. Like, for whatever reason, it's the talk about the math and the lines and the curves that just makes it seem not just scary story, but gets me more into like science fiction-y.
Yeah. It's like, it's an explanation of how extra-dimensional travel works. Like it's spells, right? Like it's magic spells, but it's math. And so you can just kind of think your way into an extra dimensional thing.
And I like the idea that there's a witch way back in Salem witch trial days who got like really, I mean, you know, she didn't figure this out on her own, but it's like that.
No, Nyarlathotep told her about it.
Yes, right. But she learned, I mean, it's math. And it's like, you have to learn something. It's not just the whole thing of like knowledge being dangerous is very.
Oh, yes. And it's not surprising too, because this is one of the last things that he wrote, works of fiction. It was published in 1933. He wrote it after At the Mountains of Madness, which is certainly why we see At the Mountain of Madness settings in here. He goes to the Plateau of Leng. He sees the Great Old Ones.
Wrong again.
He sees their Elder City. Or the elder things, not the great old ones. Pardon me.
Oh God.
I know.
We're ruined.
I know. We got to edit that out. So it is very much wrapped up in, you know, other works that Lovecraft has written. There's some notes of Shadow of Time, which is published shortly after this one. I want to say that I think that might be his. I'm sure it's not his last, but it's like closing in the last. The thing I liked was like, I do like all the witchy stuff, and I like the like kind of amateur paranormal investigation that goes on with, you know, his buddies and the other people in the house, where they like sprinkle flour on the floor to see that he walks to a place, and then they just stop because he ended up popping into another dimension there. And he does it unconsciously, which I like a lot too. Like once you learn it, like you kind of get caught up in it. Like you don't have a lot of control over it. There is a baby sacrifice involved in this story.
You cannot go wrong when you've got a baby sacrifice.
I know. Again, like this is a very, you know, it kind of gets into blood libel a little bit, but it's also very, you know, typical witch stuff, right? Like witches eat babies. Mm-hmm. Sorry, witch friends. You know, I know that's insensitive, but in New England horror style.
Yeah. I mean, they're so delicious.
I would assume. Let's see. I had some things written down now.
Brown Jenkin is just the workhorse of this story.
Yeah.
He's the one that like gets it done. He's there doing the dirty work.
Uh-huh.
Making things happen.
Yeah. And he's creepy as hell, right? Like he's a he's mostly rat, but he's like real big, like a little dog. And has human like hands and has a horrible bearded face. And he's the best.
It just makes me think of that lost cat. We had a lost cat in our neighborhood, and people put up a picture of it. And
I think I have.
It was like it had a human face. It was a cat with a human face.
Yeah,
that's all there is to it. And Todd was like, "Oh God, it's Brown Jenkin." <It's> lost.
I'll see if I think I took a picture of it, and I have it on my phone, so I'll put it on the Twitter. By the way, did you know that the fear of rats is musophobia, M-U-S-O? So not like musophobia, like a big, you know, antlered animal.
Okay. Well, yeah.
But it's musophobia.
That's interesting. I did not know that. I sure had that then.
Yeah, I think of all your phobias, like that one is probably the most pronounced.
It's
the scrabblies. It's anything scrabblies. Anything that's small and scrabbly, like totally freaks.
I'm cool. I'm cool with mice. I'm not cool with mice. I'm cool with spiders. I'm cool with snakes.
Yeah.
I'm cool with most things, but cockroaches, mice, and rats, like, they're scrabbly.
So
get your scrabbles away from me.
This is extra terrifying for you. I wonder if I should read Rats in the Walls next. That would be a good compliment to this. Because there are some, he takes some of Rats in the Walls. You can see the shadows of it in this story. Rats in the Walls is a much earlier story of his. It is what it says in the title. It is about rats in the walls. Like,
I assume that Neil Gaiman's Wolves in the Walls is based on that.
I don't know. I don't know this. Tell me about Wolves in the Walls.
And it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a family that lives in a house where they are all of a sudden, they discover there are wolves living in the walls.
The biggest barrier to reading Rats in the Walls is that is the story where the protagonist has a cat that is has a wildly racist name.
Oh, God.
So I'll have to change the name of the cat when I read it, but I don't think I don't think you lose anything by changing the name. Write in with suggestions for a renaming of this cat. I will say that, like, of the
Bartlesby.
Sure. I will say that of the people that have written in to our lovely podcast, you can reach us at hideous@podsothoth.club or on Twitter at podsothoth. And the people who write to me to a person say thank you for mentioning the racism and actually recognizing it. So far, I haven't like turned over the rock of probably mythical Lovecraft purists who are like, no, the racism is part of it, and you have to like be cool with it because Lovecraft hates it.
Yeah.
Those people apparently don't listen to this podcast.
Good.
So yeah, don't want you.
They should go away.
Yeah. There was
after telling everyone about this podcast.
Yes. Tell everyone about the podcast. So getting back to the story a little bit. So we haven't even talked about like what happens in the story. I guess we should give like a quick rundown.
I think you've forgotten how this works. Start to tell the story in a summary, and then I interrupt you.
That's right. All right. So first off, it takes place in Arkham, Massachusetts, which is a fictional location based mostly on Providence, Rhode Island. And he's renting a room in a house, and it is the Witch House. Everybody knows it's the Witch House, and everybody knows it's creepy, but it's also super duper cheap because of this.
Are you going to tell everyone about your Witch House?
So I used to live in a house we also called the Witch House. It was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was in the Squirrel Hill neighborhood, about three blocks up from Murray Avenue on Darlington Street. I don't recall the actual number, but you'd see it. When you see it, you'd notice it's a witch house. You've seen it, Claire.
We walked by it, and it was a certified shithole.
It is sagging in all the places. One might say that the angles of the house are hideous and off-putting. That was a crazy time. So I lived with four other people in this house. And this was in the middle 90s. And so, like, you know, money meant different things, and Pittsburgh was a different city then, of course. Among all five of us, we paid $300 a month. So it was effectively
total?
Free. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. It cost nothing. And so it was exactly the same situation as Gilman's, that like, oh, yeah, we signed up for this thing because it was huge and cheap. And by huge, I mean actually huge. Like, it is a, it was a two-story house with an attic, like a sort of semi-finished attic and a semi-finished basement. So it had effectively four stories. But semi-finished is the key word there. Like, it was pretty gross. I had to move out when the plumbing no longer worked to the point where I had to notify the city, and they came out and hung a scary orange sign on the door. And so I'm like, all right, never mind. We had like 4 inches of standing water in the basement. It was pretty bad. So, but we had fun times there. We were all broke and doing gothy things and living in this.
It's a good thing you were such a ladies man.
Yeah.
Because I
immediately parlayed this into like, hey, girlfriend at the time who, you know, became my wife. can I move in? She's like, sure, whatever.
I mean, come on, you would have let me live. You can't let your boyfriend live somewhere like this, right?
I have standing sewage in my basement. So anyway, so he gets his house. He has a bunch of weirdo roommates, all of them with Polish names. I think all of them have Polish names that are very hard to pronounce for me. I'm sure other people can pronounce them quite easily if you're familiar with how Polish names work. But he was a big old bookworm, and he was like equal parts into really cutting edge math and with all, you know, all the quantums in the physics. And also, he lists some of the books that he's read, namely the Necronomicon. so that should be like a hint. The Book of Ebon and the Unaussprechlichen Kulten are the three books that he mentions that he's read. And so between his math skills and his lore skills, really, like old timey witchy lore, he stumbles across this mechanism of opening portals to other dimensions, unbeknownst to him. So he only does it when he sleeps. That's how I get it anyway. Like, he sleeps and he's thinking about the stuff, you know, like how if you're like deep into something, you're dreaming about it all the time too, right? And then he ends up in this house where Keziah Mason used to live a couple hundred years ago. Like, the house is 235 years old when Gilman shows up. So it's been around a while. It's a little bit after Salem witch trials, 1692, but not too much after.
But I really like the, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Okay. I really like the scene where he talks about how Keziah Mason is is during a Salem witch trial, I assume, right? Where she's telling Judge Hathorne of lines except I'm imagining this in modern trial settings where there's like a PowerPoint, you know, and she's a witness on the witness stand, and she's like explaining this geometry, and she's got like this and then that, and then there's this the scary guy with the, you know, so it's all very kind of, there's like a bunch of bored jurors trying to stay awake.
So Judge Hathorne.
It could be Hawthorne. I don't know.
Nathaniel Hawthorne is related to John Hathorne, and John Hathorne is a historical figure and was the guy of Salem, of the Salem witch trials. So he's into his math. He's into his witch history. And then weird things start happening. He starts hearing rats in the walls. He starts seeing this purple light, kind of emanate from between cracks and things. And then he starts having crazy dreams about, Keziah Mason and Brown Jenkin, who is her legendary familiar, also has dreams of traveling through space and time, in like weird geometrical, visions, around him, both organic and inorganic. And it turns out these dreams are real, right? Like, he's actually teleporting himself around. And then, so that goes on kind of for a while. one thing, so Dreams of the Witch House is one of the longest, short stories, that Lovecraft wrote. Generally speaking, his stuff is like a quarter as long as this. This is why it took me like an hour and a half to get through it on the podcast. It is also a warning that I will never, the last episode of this podcast I record will be at the Mountains of Madness, which is about twice as long as this. But anyway, in these kind of dream adventures, he learns of Azathoth, the mad piping god in the center of all chaos, and Nyarlathotep, who is in this story is kind of pedestrian. Nyarlathotep is basically like just kind of a normal Satan figure, you know, like a patron of witches, and that's about it. Like, he's a little bit of a letdown in the story. I feel like he's, you know, a kid's version of Nyarlathotep.
It's like there's a lot going on and not much going on and all it happens, at the same time.
Yeah, and he does it over and over again. Like, basically everything in the story happens like three times.
No, it just makes me laugh a lot, where he's talking about all these crazy things that are happening, like insanely crazy things that are happening. Now, of course, I think he thinks he's dreaming them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden he gets into like, oh, but he's failing his calculus in advanced general psych class. Mm-hmm. Like, who cares at this point? I mean, you have discovered how to teleport through time and space. Yep.
And then projecting it through space, and who knows, perhaps even time itself.
And he throws it out in class at one point, which I like a lot. Like, I think, I mean, to me, like, that is, like, I see that as a very kind of Jeffrey Combs, Stuart Gordon sort of scene, right? Oh, where he would just, like, he just, like, throws it out. And everybody in class is like, what are you talking about? And then the professor is like, you're a goddamn genius. How did you come up with this? And he's like, I don't know. It just seems like it makes sense. So there's one scene as Gilman is getting more and more enraptured with this whole thing, where it starts intruding on his waking life, and he feels this pull. And this part is, every time I read it, it feels like it's one of the more subtle things going on in the story. It's like Lovecraft does definitely like hit you over the head with obvious stuff, and then you're supposed to like, you know, not realize what's happening, but of course you know what's happening. That's part of the, you know, it's part of the dramatic irony, right? Like, you know what's going on and the characters are clueless. But one of the more subtle things is this pull that he gets, where like at a certain times of the day, you know, in the morning, it feels like it's pulling him down. And then in the afternoon, it feels like it's pulling him eastward. And then as the day goes on, it's pulling him up. I do think it takes a little bit to get like, oh, this is a point in space and it's the rotation of the Earth that's making it seem like it's coming from a different mm-hmm. place, right? And I do think I think that part in particular really kind of captures like the cosmicness of the cosmic core, where, you know, it's not just like a blasted heath in the middle of Massachusetts or something where all the witches go and do their rites and whatever. It is a star that is billions of light years away, but now he has this connections to it because of his extra dimensional travel. I like that part a lot. Like that is to me like one of the most attractive like sci-fi features of this. And this comes up in the Arkham Horror Living Card Game that we play. It comes up in Lovecraft Country. There's a lot of like instantaneous travel between planets, both in the TV show and in the book.
Yeah.
So
I get a lot of Phantasm. Like, well, obviously this came before Phantasm, but
just, Phantasm, if you have not, dear listener, if you have not watched Phantasm, it is one of the most wild horror movie. I guess it's a horror movie because there's like corpses and a mausoleum and the cemetery and bodies and stuff and creepy things are going on and all that. But it's like, it is so beyond horror. It is like quintessential Lovecraft. Like, I would say Phantasm is probably the most Lovecraftian mainstream, I guess, movie that you're going to find. Like, no spoilers, though. You'll just have to watch it.
You can't even spoil it, because that would imply there's a plot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and if you read about Phantasm...
And I say that with love.
Yeah. If you read about Phantasm, like, the goal, like, the director's goal is like, oh, no, it's dreamlike, and the plot is, like, really fragmented, like in a dream. And once you realize that, then you realize, like, the brilliance of Phantasm. If you just go in watching it expecting, like, a horror movie, like a Friday the 13th, where, like, it's, like, a beginning and a middle and end and a moral and in your horror, like, you're not going to find that in Phantasm. So I really like it. Thank you for bringing that up. That is an excellent comparison. Dreams of the Witch House is Phantasm.
Dreams in the witch house, honey.
House. Dreams around the witch house.
Dreams near the witch house.
Dreams beneath the witch house.
Oh, that's not right. No.
Yeah, and so anyway, so he does all this stuff. He's getting more and more into it. And then he runs into her on the street at one point. And like, she is, because Ian Mason has manifested in an alleyway. She's stealing a baby along with her dread familiar, Brown Chicken, and along with Nyarlathotep. He's there too. So the whole gang's there. And Gilman,
it takes a lot of people to steal this baby.
I know. Like, how hard is it, honestly?
I mean, the more people you have, the more attention you're going to draw. Mm-hmm.
So they steal the baby, and then some other weird shit happens. And then Gilman finds himself in Keziah's, in like the room that's in the witch house that you can't see from the outside. which if you like that kind of thing, if you like architectural horror, Dreams in the Witch House and then House of Leaves, like immediately read House of Leaves. And there's Lovecraft Adventure in there. There's all kind of good stuff in there. Read it. So, so they steal this baby and, Gilman shows up in Keziah's room, which you can't normally get to in the house. And so through some portal, like these portals work, like you can go to another planet or you can travel, you know, 36 inches, like past a wall. and that's cool too. And so he shows up in there and he, like Gilman tries to prevent the sacrifice of this baby, but Brown Jenkin leaps to Keziah Mason's rescue. Gilman like takes a swing at Keziah Mason. Brown Jenkin, leaps up on the baby and, I think bites through its wrists, her wrists, his wrists. I don't know. I don't know if the baby is gendered at this point, but bites the wrist and a bunch of blood comes out and Brown Jenkin like then falls into an abyss. that is also conveniently in the middle of the room. They're, I think entirely. So Brown Jenkin has a way out. And so Gilman ultimately fails at stopping this ritual. This whole story is a series of failure from Gilman. He's very
ineffectual.
He's kind of a passenger in his own story. He's not really driving it himself.
This is exactly why the game
Arkham Horror, the living card game.
This is exactly why Arkham Horror, the card game. You're just a passenger in that game.
There are scenarios where it is impossible. And it's designed to be that way because it is faithful to the Lovecraft tradition to not be great at this. So he fails at saving the baby. And then he goes deaf at one point for some reason. I don't even remember why. And he wakes up the next day and he's like, oh man, I totally failed at saving that baby. And also the kidnapping is in the newspaper. And he talks to his buddy, Frank Elwood.
We're on a mission from God.
Not of the Blues Brothers. And he's like, ooh, I think I might have had something to do with that. And he's like, what are you talking about? And then he gets real sick and everyone starts praying over him. And then Brown Jenkin like bursts out of his stomach. And then he dies. And like everyone sees it too. Like there's a whole bunch of people there. It's like everyone who lives in the house is there when it happens. I think there's a cop. The landlord is there. And so everyone sees this happen. Landlord is like, I'm done with this. I know I've been renting this haunted house for a while, but it was never this haunted. So I'm done. Everybody's evicted and the city, condemns it, and tears it down. This house has been around, like, it's shocking that this house does not have like a historical marker on it, but I guess people weren't doing that too much in the 20s and 30s. but they bulldoze a house and they end up finding like a fuck ton of bones. And that's like a big scary reveal. There's a ton of bones, children's bones mostly, and also like a creepy rat thing bone, which of course skeleton, I mean, not just one bone. That would be weird. But yeah, a whole creepy rap thing, skeleton, which is of course Brown Jenkin, and a sculpture, of one of the elder things is in there too. And so those all end up in the Miskatonic Museum. And the rest of it is, I guess thrown into a landfill and that's it. So you can never actually visit the witch house anymore because it's been torn down canonically.
So what is Brown Jenkin? I know he's a familiar and a rat thing, but like, how did he, was he a man turned into a rat or what?
What is that? What?
So I think it's unclear. My take is that he's a demon. Like he's straight up like a minor, like an imp.
Okay.
You know, like an imp demon. You know, my opinion is colored quite strongly by like Neil Gaiman, right? And Sandman and things like that. Is he supernatural or is he an alien? You know, it could be an alien. Mm. There could be like a whole planet full of Brown Jenkins. Who knows?
Is it Brown's Jenkin? You're talking about more than one of them.
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, his name is Brown. And we don't actually know his name. Brown Jenkin is what the townspeople call him. You know?
Okay.
Like, and Keziah Mason never says like, hey, Brown Jenkin, blah, 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 blah. Like, there's no conversation between them.
Right. Yeah.
But he also knows, isn't it mentioned that he knows like all tongues? Like he has this mystical ability.
He knows all the languages.
Yeah.
But he's.
Which points to demon. I mean, that's a very kind of classical demon trait. Yeah. I think he's a demon. I think he's supernatural. I think he comes from some other plane of existence that Nyarlathotep has access to. I assume he's a gift to like Nyarlathotep's favorite witches on earth. I know that he drinks from the witch's teat, and he drinks blood, which is also super creepy. so yeah, he's like, he strikes me as something like through and through supernatural, very unlike, the Great Race of Yith and all these other like, and the Maigo, like all of these other creatures are like quite clear to me at least as being aliens, right? They're not monsters. They're aliens. But Brown Jacket's a monster for sure.
Okay. I'm looking at a wiki, villains.fandom.com/wiki/Brown Jenkin.
Mm-hmm.
It has been speculated that Jenkin is the offspring of Keziah and the Black Man.
Mm,
I mean, it has been, you know, I don't know what people are saying.
But hey, I'm just a normal kid like you, except that I ask questions.
Right. Yeah. I just saying.
So that actually brings up one of the criticisms I've read about the story is that there's no continuity between like the science fiction-y bits and the horror-y bits. Like I would think that a treatment of it now would have Brown Jenkin be like an alien or a clone or something like that, right? Like something a little more sci-fi than horror. Or the other way is that, or just say that like, oh, quantum math is magic, you know, or something like that.
Right.
Like cast it all as supernatural or all as sci-fi, but like I'm perfectly comfortable with Dreams of the Witch House being ambivalent on the sci-fi versus the fantasy and kind of blending. Mm-hmm. I think it's great that it's blended.
I mean, why can't witchery involve science?
So there's
math.
I mean, there's the story that like Lovecraft wrote it and he like kind of was okay with it, and then he put it away for a while and it didn't get published. For a while, like he wasn't thrilled with it. He's like, it's a little hack. Turns out it's, in my opinion, one of his best works. So
yeah,
so
I really liked it.
That's Dream of the Witch House.
All right. Dreams in the Witch House.
Dreams upon the Witch House.
In dreams in the general neighborhood of the witch house.
So as I mentioned, we haven't cast any pod in a little while. But that means in the meantime, we got like a bunch of correspondence. So it feels like we have more fans than we really do.
This is exciting.
Yeah. I have two emails I would like to read to you, Claire.
Yes, please.
One of them is from Michael Shanks, and he says, I've been listening through your work, and I wanted to let you know that Ulthar is 100% in the Dreamlands because the city appears in the Dream City of Unknown Kadoth. Yes, I agree, Michael. I think we were speculating in The Cats of Ulthar whether or not Ulthar was in the Dreamlands or if it was like a real place that got transferred in the Dreamlands. Anyway, Michael says that it's 100% in there. You are right, Michael. Congrats. You won the internet today. And then we have a note from Yoda Rocks. And she says, I've been enjoying both the readings of the stories and your commentary, which is great to hear. You have a really neat take on it, like discussing actual landmarks, which I can only hope to visit when the world opens up again and when I can actually afford it. And even the occasional legal take, I think, is really cool. I'm hoping to get into law school for the fall of 2021. So that's something that's really interested me and that I haven't heard on other podcasts. And just knowing Claire's a lawyer is really cool. So Yoda Rocks is a Claire fan. And then we got some nice notes.
Well, I'm a Yoda Rocks fan.
Yeah. And we got some nice notes, publicly on Twitter, from at Joshua Luke Cable, at Matthew Sensei, and at Super Legend 666, who is also known as Sean Patrick.
What up, Big T? Stop.
I was just going to ask about Sean Patrick.
Yes, he's moved from email into Twitter. He's leveled up.
Okay. We've been out of the game too long. I feel bad that I feel I like we, let our four fans
we,
down.
You know what? What's done is done. And all we can do is look
You're
forward.
Right. Yes.
And so I will edit this thing up, put it out there, and we'll get back into it. I was wondering, like, if people actually cared about the reading versus the discussion. Some people have said to me, well, like, the people who listen to it in real life that we know have said, the discussions are better. I'm like, yes, obviously they're better because Claire's involved. But other people like the reading a lot. And yeah. So I think I'll have to just keep it up. And like,
keep
I don't know.
Of course.
I feel like I'm gunning for an achievement, like a video game style achievement. It's like achievement. Read aloud all of Lovecraft.
not a lot of people will be able to say that.
No, not at all. I think a few people have read all of Lovecraft's fiction, but far fewer have read them aloud. So
do it. Keep going.
I will. Well, thank you. I will.
You have a nice voice.
Well, so do you. I also way over invested in audio equipment. So
gotta get our money's worth.
And it's not just for this podcast. I also have another podcast. I should mention it. It's Security Nation. If you are a Lovecraft person who also likes computer and network security, you should listen to that because I talked to an entirely different woman in my life, my boss, Jen Ellis, on
your
that.
Your other boss.
My other boss. Jen Ellis, and we talk about security stuff. And so if you like this podcast, maybe you'll like that one because it's also kind of weird and jokey. But it's securitynationpodcast.com and you can find it there. So
I just really enjoyed this story a lot. I thought it was
me too.
Equal parts creepy and sci-fi, which I like. Yeah.
I think for the next one, I'll reach back a little bit further and get something earlier and a little, obviously something much shorter. All right. Well,
all right.
Thank you for listening and have a wonderful rest of your evening and get vaccinated, please.
I'm not even going to say please. Just fucking do it.
Lie to your family. It's fine.